What's up, everybody? I am Biafra.
And I am Stanley.
Welcome to our podcast, Shapes of Love.
This is the show for anyone who has loved,
is in love,
will love,
or been loved.
So yeah, I think that's everyone.
I think you're right. So on our show, we're going to talk about everything love, y'all.
So have you ever wanted to have conversations about the different types of love?
When's the best time to love?
Or even how to heal a broken heart?
Well, that's exactly the kind of topics we're going to do on our show.
So get ready for some tea, y'all, on this week's episode of...
Shapes of Love. Welcome, y'all. Welcome. This is the first episode back for season two. Stanley and I are your co-hosts, for those of you who don't know. And today we are going to be talking about love and marriage. The model relationship, ? And to really dive into this conversation, you know, Stanley and I love to bring our guests. We have one special guest that we brought in today, and we'd like for him to introduce himself.
Hi, it is good to be with you, both Stanley and Biafra. My name is Wesley. I am Pastor Wesley. I serve as a pastor for Wooded Community Church in Wood Island. And as far as relationship is concerned, I have been married for 14 years. This year will be 15.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We have two children, Wesley Wanyak Jr. He is 13 years old, and we have Skylar, who's 8 years old. Mm. And as far as profession is concerned, I am a senior cytotechnologist, so we screen for cancer. You know, But I am very excited to be with you today and to be able to talk about marriage, because this is something that is very close to my heart. And I've really been involved as far as counseling couples and everything and doing couples retreat. So I can't wait to have that conversation with you guys.
I mean, we can't wait either. Shoot. Thank you for being with us.
Yes, we'd like to thank you for being with us today. And as you can see, he's honestly the perfect guest for this kind of conversation, y'all. And so why don't we just jump right in. So, you know, Stanley and I sort of coming from a place where we believe the concept of marriage, and, you know, I guess it can be objectively said that the concept of marriage has changed drastically over time, right? And so, you know, marriage was once an institution that served primarily an economic resource or political even focused means, right? It was a partnership that was for survival, a partnership that was, you know, I had to make sure that I was with someone that could take care of me, or, you know, very much the economic aspect was a large part of that. Over time, as you know, it has changed, you know, and I would say, I think in the last century, it is agreed that it started centering towards love more, and the idea of marriage being with love. And as we have, as in the last 40, 50 years, again, I think scholars agree that it has changed yet again. Right. And so that's what we're here to discuss today. What is the current cultural perceptions and expectations of marriage, of married life? Well, what are your opinion and thoughts on how we as a society today in America sort of view the institution of marriage, and what should exist in that relationship? How should that relationship look like? What should that life look like?
That's a good question. Certainly, you know, when we're talking about marriage and we're talking about the United States, because we are such a melting pot, so we have people that look at it from different angles, you know, so that what may work for one person or one family may not necessarily work for somebody else, you know, so I see each couple or each marriage as something that is unique. And even though that there may be some expectations or principles that apply to all marriages in order for them to work, but there are certain things that will work for some couples but do not work for some others. I wanted to touch more because I want to look at it first from a biblical perspective. You know, I do understand what you mean by at times marriage used to be about, okay, I'm looking for somebody to take care of me. I'm looking for somebody to really make sure that I have a bright future. That's true, because even in the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, we would see that parents would marry their daughters to rich men so that they could have a good future. Mm. So that is true. However, if you look at it from the very beginning, in Genesis chapter 2, verse 18 to 25, you'll find that...
Yes, Chris, you're here today.
It is not... I'm not going to read it, but just so that people may have a reference. Mm. You will find that the foundation of marriage, really, according to scripture, had to be love. Mm. You know, because it was something that was born out of a need where... Adam needed to find that, okay, I need somebody to be my helper, but that helper is not so much of a slave, but somebody that is there to protect you, to help you to become your better self. The word that they use is ezer, which means a protector, really. You know, so it's not somebody that is under you, but it's somebody that is equal to you.
So okay.
We find that when he saw Eve, he said that now this is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. So that the marriage really is not a place where there is competition, but it's a place where there's completion. So as I get married to my wife makes me my better self and I make her her better self. And of course, this doesn't happen right away, but over time, you know what I mean? We look for each other's interests. So I think the general point for all marriages really should be a consensual relationship where people enter into a covenant. And that covenant really is characterized by love and by seeking the best interest of the other person. Okay. Because I think if we have that in mind, that way, no matter where you are or who you are, if you're looking for the best interest of your spouse, if you are in covenant and if you are loving one another, then there is a better possibility for it to work. Of course, now with culture, there are different changes as far as what marriage is. But I think like for the general thing, if it's within the covenant, if it's based on love, if it is based on seeking the best interest of the other person, then I think those principles might work for every marriage, really.
Okay. All right. So you said a lot of good points that we are definitely going to be getting into as this conversation unfolds. Namely, really, the idea of the relationship of marriage and institution of marriage sort of being one that should be centered around love, which I do agree is the general cultural perception of today that, you know, the marriage should involve love and love should be at the center of that, as well as which apparently is more of a modern phenomenon of the idea of wanting to sort of have that personal growth and that transcending as a person and becoming a better person as a result of your partnership with your partner. So those are some good points that you put on. And I want to...
Wait, I have a question. I know we're trying to push this along, but I do want to pause for a second. And Wesley or Pastor Wesley, like, do you think that, you know, with this growing of like, there's a lot of words that I also like hit upon, like completion and better self and like all these things. Like, do you think that, you know, that can be accomplished with any person, or is that like some, do you kind of, I guess, believe in one person being that, like, you know, that compatible person? Does that make sense? Like the one versus.
I understand what you mean. People are saying that there's one person that is
going right.
I actually don't I don't espouse that kind of teaching. You know, I don't think that there is one person that is made for you. I believe that there are people that are better fit. Mm. For instance, the point is to know yourself. And once you know yourself, you know what you like and what you don't like and what works for you, what doesn't work for you. Now, as you meet people, there will be people that actually brings more of what you want out of a relationship. You know, so I think that as long as the person has similar values and they are willing to work with you, because a marriage is a partnership and it cannot be one-sided. It has to be both people being willing to love one another so that I am loving you and you're loving me back. Because if there's no reciprocity, then eventually one person is going to get tired. You know what I mean?
Right.
But certainly, if you can find somebody that has the same value as you do, and they are willing to work with you, then certainly you can begin the journey towards wholeness, towards completion, and towards all that beautiful stuff. But I do not actually believe that there's one person that was created just for you. If that was true, then once they die, you wouldn't be able to remarry. You know, I mean, it's something that you saw. But I do believe that now that I'm with my wife, I go against my own theology. Why? Because I can picture myself with anybody else but her. You got what I mean? However, I don't believe that I was created just for her or she was created just for me. I believe that anybody that has the same value system and that was willing to work with me would actually work out.
No, I love that. I do. And like what I'm getting at is, what I'm hearing is like, it takes work. It's not just someone who is like a piece to the puzzle or like someone that's a missing link. It's like, if you have two people who are, you know, willing to, you know, foster this relationship, like it can potentially happen with like, I wouldn't say anyone, but it can happen, you know, with many people.
Yes, for sure.
Okay, good. Okay. Sorry, Biafra, I cut you off. I don't know if you had like a burning question. But I wanted to just talk about the one. I just thought this was really interesting.
No, I think that is an interesting part. And I'm glad that he shared that that idea, because that is definitely something that is pervasive in our culture, that idea of the one.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that people understand that if they believe in that, they're not one
the perfect match. I think there's even shows. I think yeah. So let's see, one thing I wanted to get into, in terms of what you talked about as marriages being a place of love and being a place where we're supposed to better ourselves, right? Being a possibility for a partnership, right? Yeah. There are some that argue, and I think I might be in this camp, that the current model of marriage, the current model of romantic relationships generally, even if we're looking outside of marriage, this idea of a romantic partnership, a prolonged romantic partnership, there's a notion that essentially that they have become the primary relationships in our lives, right? Which was not necessarily always the case. Like, they've now become the focal point.
Wait, I think what you're trying to say, Biafra, is that, like, you know, with marriage and with like partnerships and that sort of like nature, you know, your partner becomes the one person, that sole relationship that you kind of go to for, you know, nurturing, for support, for advice. And, you know, that's not always the case. We, like, before marriage, we never usually had one person to go to. It was spread out against our friends and family. So I'm gonna guess Biafra is trying to say, like, you know, what do you think about that, Pastor Wesley? Like, that kind of like move from, you know, diversifying your support group to maybe that one person being your end all be all.
That is a great question, and there's so many different facets that we could look at it. My personal view is this. I believe that marriage, the relationship between a spouse, a husband and a wife, they are the strongest bond that you can have, because that's the person that knows you fullest, and you are actually sharing life together. You're sharing your bodies, you're sharing your thoughts, your emotions and everything. So I think that this relationship comes before everything else, or at least should come before everything else. Now, when I say this, I understand that depending on culture also, it may not be so, you know, because even in scripture, you will find that there were different aspects where people, they felt like, okay, well, there are things that they could share with their parents, but not with their spouse. You know, depending on the culture, you will have a different understanding of it. But I do believe that the relationship between a spouse or between spouses, it is the strongest relationship, and it is where we should put most of our priorities, so that I give my best to my spouse and my spouse gives her best to me. Mm. However, I think that if we were to say that this is the only relationship where you go and you look for nurture, you look for support, or you look for a sense of encouraging yourself, then it might be this somewhat dysfunctional. I wouldn't say all the way, but because it is unfair to ask somebody to be everything for you.
Right.
Because if that's what you seek, eventually you overwhelm that person, and it becomes unrealistic, because nobody can be there for you 100%. Nobody can be there for you for everything you feel, everything you're going through. You may be able to share, but I think that a man needs to have male friends because there are certain things you're going through. Yes, you can talk to your wife, but the male friend may be able to understand and be like, yeah, I went through the same thing, you know, because you can relate on that aspect. The same thing, women, it's been found that when they spend time with their girlfriends, they relieve certain hormones that makes them feel better. You know what I mean? So they need that kind of friend. Otherwise, what you find is after you have a long day of work, you come home and then you are bombarded with everything because the person has it. And that doesn't work. That's like, oh my God, that's too much. So I would discourage that. I would discourage the idea that you need to just pour all of yourself into your spouse, because I think this is very dangerous. As a matter of fact, if you can maintain relationship, good relationship with friends and with families and also in-laws, I think it helps your marriage. Because when you're going through something, these people can intervene because they are in the best interest of your relationship. But if you cut off everybody else because now you're married and it's all me and you, just the two of us, that's a very dangerous way to go. It doesn't work, I would say.
And I honestly think that is honestly an aspect that has been pervasive in this new model of marriage of essentially like our romantic partner sort of being the everything. Because I do feel that burden exists, you know, and that we do tend to easily fall into almost a trap of placing all of these burdens only on one person. And even either gradually or sometimes suddenly, you know, you find when, you know, there's all these jokes and memes about how, you know, when maybe if my guy friend gets a relationship, like I'm never going to see him again, you know, I never get to talk to him because now he has a girlfriend, right? Like this idea of that, like sometimes, you know, people enter these romantic relationships and that becomes the center and that becomes the number one priority, as you said, but it's to an extent that the other support networks and the other relationships now start to be detrimented as a result of that. Right. And so I definitely agree with the point that, you know, and I think that is where I have for sure been leaning more. And I guess I would have pushed back against was sort of the importance and need of that sort of communal framework, the idea of like the other relationships. But I think I would argue that value on let's call it like platonic relationships or platonic friendships, I would argue that it is not present in society today. It's not present in culture today, in sort of especially with how valuable it can be for your romantic relationship and having a strong social network together. I feel that platonic relationships as a whole are very much considered second, maybe in third tier behind, let's say, family.
Okay.
And as a result of that, those relationships that go first when people enter romantic relationships, like, oh yeah, I haven't talked to my best friend in 5 years, you know, and it's like time goes, that kind of thing. The idea that like, those are sometimes some of the first relationships to be affected by relationships. Like, oh, I don't, you know, especially I would say maybe among our generation or just, but I just definitely think it's what is part of the phenomenon that has been happening present.
It's about seeking the balance. When you're seeking a girl, or you know, you give your all to her, but after you get her, you know, of course you still nourish the relationship, but it shouldn't take you away from everything else. As a matter of fact, it's one of the things that leads to abusive relationship where you are separated from everybody else.
That's an important point.
Because if it works, it's a beautiful thing because that person can really be there for you. But if it doesn't work, then your network is totally not there anymore. Right. So there's nobody who will take you, nobody you can run to. So I would discourage it, you know. But I have to say that I do believe that even now we can find some platonic relationship. For instance, I love my wife. My wife is my best friend. Mm. But there are certain things that I want to talk to. Like, for instance, if I'm talking about ministry, I will call another pastor friends. You know what I mean? There are certain things I talk to my brothers and sisters. You know what I mean? Because it's a different kind of thing you're seeking, because my wife can't be everything for me, but I can talk to my wife about everything. You know what I mean? But you can still maintain this platonic relationship even though you are married or you're going out. It's very healthy to do so.
Do you have any advice? I want to call you Wesley, but I can't help but call you Pastor Wesley. But but do you have any advice for like young people who are listening to this, who are you know out there dating and out there seeking a partner, but also having a hard time, you know, also putting emphasis and value into their friendships because, you know, they see a potential loved one that, you know, could work, you know? Because I know, I mean, when I dated, like, it has been hard to juggle, you know, potentially seeing someone that you who could be a partner and also, you know, making sure you're spending the same amount of time with your family and friends. Like, I don't know if that's a common issue you've seen with other people, but do you have any advice, I guess, for any listeners?
Yes, a good question. So basically, I think in the question, what I hear is sharing an equal amount of time. I don't think that's possible because I think that every time we have different relationships, they come with a cost. So if I used to give you 100% of my time and now I'm seeking somebody, of course you're not going to get 100% anymore. It may be now you get 30, they get 70, or you get 40, they get 60. So I think that depending on where you are in the stage of seeking, for instance, like they talk about the first 18 months where you feel like you are really enraptured by the person's love.
We talked very much about that phase.
Yes.
That honeymoon phase.
You're dreaming about them, you know, like you can see no wrong whatsoever. You know, I mean, and it doesn't matter what people tell you, there's no flaw in them, you know. So at that time, obviously, you're putting a lot of time seeking them and you may not even pay attention, but I think eventually our brains, they get back to normal. We're like, okay, let's come back to reality where we're like, okay, well, this person can't take all of my time. Then you start giving some time to your families, to your friends and everything. And I think what it takes is a lot of support. You know what I mean? We need families and friends that can understand the stage where we are and that can actually embrace it. For instance, if a young person is seeking a relationship and that's taking some time, you know, because they are giving a lot more time, you need friends that can support that to be like, okay, well, right now they are seeking a good relationship, you know what I mean? Or the family, they support what they're trying to do. But if you do have a support system or a lack of support system that makes you feel guilty, like you are a bad person for not being there for them the way you used to be, it can cause both relationship now to suffer because now you are there for them out of guilt, but your heart is somewhere else. You know what I mean? I think if we have good friends and good family that understand, okay, in this stage of my life, this is what I'm pursuing. Can you be there for me? It makes life a lot easier.
Speaking wisdom. I hope anyone who's listening is taking notes because I sure am. I appreciate all the words of wisdom for sure.
And I guess to sort of go further into that point, you know, what do you feel are some of maybe the misconceptions about a lasting romantic relationship, about marriage, you know, about making that work and about the work necessary in sort of creating a perpetual loving relationship and how to exist in that?
All right. If I look at it from a religious perspective, one of the first misconceptions I would say is over-spiritualizing thing. For instance, some people, they believe that just because I love God and the person loves God is going to work.
Oh, wow. Simple but powerful. Yes. Okay, go further into that.
Then it's going to work. Or all I need to do is pray. So if I know relationship is investment of time, of energy, or communication, and even the Bible goes against that, you know, because relationship takes a lot of work. So I think some misconception is that, okay, well, it will happen. And sometimes people will say, you know what, if you love something, let it go. If it's meant for you, it will come back.
No. He said it's not coming back, y'all. He said it's not coming back. Let it go, it's gone.
If you love your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your wife, and your husband, you definitely fight for them. If there's anything that comes as a threat to the relationship and it's something you truly love or it's something you truly want, you definitely fight for it. So it doesn't come easy. I think sometimes people don't put a lot of emphasis also on communication. You know what I mean? They think, okay, well, in love, everything is permitted. So that, okay, well, there was a point that I used to court you, I used to send you flower and be all nice. And now that you're mine, I can treat you however I want. I can take certain liberties. Mm-hmm. And I think that really causes a lot of marriages to fail and a lot of relationships to fail, because how you communicate, you know what I mean, will determine whether or not the relationship works. As a matter of fact, any institution, organization, work, church, society, it cannot be sustained if the relationship, if the communication is abusive or not supportive. So what you need is what they call edifying communication. For instance, I am writing a book now where just today I was writing that point on Ephesians chapter 5, verse 19. It says, talk to one another with psalms, with hymns, and also with songs, spiritual songs. And the point I was making is communication is so important, because when you read the book of Psalms, you find that you can go to the book of Psalms for any experience that you are going through, any feelings, any emotions that you're going through. And what it's saying is that we need to come to the point where relationship can be a space where we show empathy with people, where they feel totally vulnerable to be themselves, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and not feel that they are being judged, or not feel that the thing that they've shared with you is going to be used against them. But if you feel that, okay, now that I've got you, I can treat you however I want, I can talk to you however I want, I think that many people may be surprised that they lose a good thing, because they thought that, okay, once I have you, I can take you for granted. Relationship, you should never take for granted. That person you have, that's a prize. You know what I mean? The same effort that you put in to seek them, you continue to seek them for the rest of their lives.
I definitely, that's
a lot of points. Great.
I know. A lot of points there. A lot of points there. And I definitely think you're right in terms of that misconception, that switch up, essentially, of the chase, and when you're no longer chasing and you guys are actually now in a relationship with one another, and how what that look like can change sometimes dramatically. And I think that, I guess, on a realistic level, that you do need that communication and managing and mitigating of expectations, at the least of, yeah, I was doing these things maybe prior, but this is what it can look like now, you know, that kind of thing. Just a mutual understanding of what the relationship will look like in that specific season or in that time, you know, or moving forward.
And one thing I keep, like, what I'm taking out of it is, like, relationships are work. Like, it's not something that you can just, like, once you have your partner, you can just, you know, ease back. I feel like it's something that we're so used to after we, you know, we get into that committed relationship. Like, we think we've won and we've completed what needs to be done, but, like, that's just half the battle. It's, I think, like, doing the extra step of trying to keep up that chase feeling, or, you know, the what we like to call the honeymoon phase, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, your partner always feels like they're being chased and always feels like, you know, they're still, you know, I guess, yeah, it's used to, like, a prize. So, like, I know, I just love this. This is, like, it's very simple. I think it's very effective in the way that you've said it. And, like, I don't know, I'm, like, again, listeners, I hope you are taking notes. I am going down bullet by bullet. Like, yeah.
Great. Awesome.
And I guess I continued along this path, like, and the idea of communication being very important to sustain our relationship. And as you said, in any institution, when I think it's a great point, like the fact that you needed to sustain any organization, institution, it is one of the most commonly said things, I feel like, but I feel like it's for a reason, essentially. You know, there's a reason why communication being the foundation of relationship is a trope, or is overstated, because it cannot really be overstated how fundamental it is to its growth. And so, and I guess, you know, you've also mentioned how, you know, you get to counsel some marriage couples. So what do you feel are the tools that people need or maybe lacking many times when entering these partnerships or relationships, or that you find maybe the most common or the most maybe difficult to overcome? Like, what are some of the essential tools you need to make a lasting relationship work?
Yes, very good question. I think it's for every relationship, really. One of the things we need to understand is, in order for me to be a good match to somebody else, I have a responsibility to know myself.
Oof. Oof.
See, because
that's love myself. Love my neighbors as myself, as I like to say. The myself is the foundation. Mm-hmm.
So
go on.
If I don't know myself, if I don't know what makes me tick, what makes me happy, what makes me sad, then I can jump into a relationship for the wrong reason, because somebody looks good or maybe aesthetic or something. But if that person then has something in their character or personality that rubs me the wrong way, I'm setting myself up for failure. I think as couples are looking into getting into relationship, one thing that is very important for them is to find out, who am I? You know what I mean? Like, what is my personality, you know? And who can I get along with better than others? And you find that out. That doesn't mean that you cannot change, because your personality can always be tweaked and you can learn to live with just about anybody. And some people, they are more easy and more adaptable. But if we don't know ourselves, what we will probably bring to a relationship is a lot of frustration, because we insist on somebody making us feel better about ourselves, but we ourselves, we are not, we don't love ourselves. If I don't love myself, you, no matter what you do, I will never be pleased. So I will continually raise the bar. No matter what you do, it's like, okay, I'm not good enough, but the problem is I don't know myself, I don't love myself, I don't accept myself. So I think that there needs to be some personal healing first. Who am I, and am I bringing like assets to the relationship, or am I more of a liability? And of course, all of us can be liabilities in some way, because there's no perfect person. But what I want to make sure is that when I go into a relationship, I bring more assets than liabilities. I bring more good than I bring things, because my point is to make that person feel loved. But if I don't love myself, I can't really love them. You know what I mean? So knowing yourself is very important. Taking some personality tests, you know, taking love languages. There are the 5 love languages.
We talked about it all here, Pastor.
Yes.
Talked about it all. Yes.
You know, there's quiztick.com where you find out about your own personality, you know, and what kind of personalities you can work with. And there are so many things to just find out, who am I? And once you find out, you know yourself, and then you can share it with the person so that they know what they're dealing with. You know what I mean? And you need to ask those questions, okay? Like, what are the things that really irritates me? What are the things that really make me happy? And if something is, you're getting more of the positive, then you know it might work. But if it's always something that causes you to feel not so much that you are in a good place, then you might be like, okay, well, maybe this is not a good fit. It could still work. But it takes too much work, because life is complicated anyway. You know what I mean? Why complicate it even further? You know, so we're going to have problems anyway. But if I can see red flags, it's better to stay away, because you can always find somebody else that is a better fit for you.
I love how you talked about sort of the abdication of responsibility, of sort of taking care and loving oneself and sort of placing that on others. Which I think, again, can be an easy pitfall or easy thing we overlook with this model of, or with this expectation of our partnerships, of our partners sort of make helping us become better people, right? Sometimes it can be easy to now sort of push that responsibility on them for making you continue to make you that the person that you want to be for yourself.
Yeah.
Wow.
And like, one thing I'm getting from this is that, like, it reminds me of a few conversations we've had in the past, Biafra, like kind of the timing of love and like relationships. Like, I feel like, I think we had a live or like a recording, like the right time to love or something like that. And I think this kind of almost mirrors that conversation in the sense that, like, you know, as Pastor Wesley said, if you're bringing a lot of like liabilities, or if you're bringing a lot of unknown into the relationship, that's only going to cause friction, and maybe that may not be the right time to kind of fall into like a, you know, significant relationship. So I think this is dope. I feel like it validates like kind of like we kind of think and understand about love, and I don't know, it's very cool just hearing about it.
You know, scripture teaches that in the book of Song of Psalms, the Shulamite woman, she says that do not seek love until you are ready, you know what I mean? Because there is a
which book was that? You said the
Book of Song of Solomon. Yes, Song of Solomon. So at least three or four times, she says to the young ladies that are taking care of her, please do not seek love until you are truly ready, because love comes with a lot of things. And sometimes if you're not ready, you can really cause it to be less than what it should be.
I kind of want to go a little bit deeper on this, though, because, like, I know we had a conversation about this earlier, Biafra, but, like, I do want to get your own opinions on Pastor Wesley. Like, what do you think is ready for someone? Like, I hear we talking about, like, liabilities and, like, we talk about, like, kind of the knowing of self, but, like, is there anything else that, like one should kind of prepare or do to be ready, or is, do you think it's kind of on a person-by-person basis?
Yeah, essentially, what is the general criteria one can use, like one can ask themselves or sort of compare themselves to sort of come to the conclusion that, you know, they should be, you know, let's say on paper, ready to love.
Okay, well, very good. And, you know, I don't think there is one answer to this because, as you said, and as I said before, each relationship is unique. You know what I mean? So we cannot say, well, there's a certain age or there's a certain financial status that you should have, because it varies for many different people because you see different things. For instance, personally for me, when I wanted, every time I wanted to get into a relationship, I was thinking marriage. You know what I mean? Is that somebody that I can marry? You know what I mean? Is somebody that I can live the rest of my life with? So what I was looking for is, okay, well, first of all, am I ready yet? Because if I'm thinking marriage, and I'm 16 years old, you know, and so I haven't finished high school yet. I haven't come to college and I had big, big dreams as to what I want to do. I didn't want to waste somebody's life, or not waste, you know, I just didn't want to play with somebody's time. You get what I mean? Like, okay, keep them in a relationship for 7-10 years when I know I have big dreams for myself. You know what I mean? So I became more serious about relationship after I graduated college, you know, so that doesn't mean I didn't like people. I like people, but I really wanted to seek somebody that I wanted to marry after I graduated college, because I had a good job and I was thinking, okay, well, I could take care of that person or we could make a life together. But of course, there's no such thing as a perfect relationship either. You know what I mean? So when we're talking about being ready, that doesn't mean that just because you're ready, everything's going to be perfect. But it's just like, okay, well, first of all, you have to be ready emotionally, you know? So
Talk to your hearts, y'all.
If you are a wreck, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and you're not ready yet, then you can cause a lot of pain by being, like, causing a lot of emotional pain to somebody unnecessarily because you're hurting. And if you're hurting, hurt people, you know what I mean? So if you're hurting, it's better to deal with yourself first. If, and you know, relationship also, they go, depending if you have puppy love, that's one thing. But you know, if you're going to go out, at least if you're going to take a lady to a date, at least from my point of view, you should be able to pay for the dish. Now they can pay for themselves, you know, because this is a world where everybody's equal, but just in case, because you're the one that initiated the thing, you have enough money to pay for that dish, you know. But if you're not, then it, you got me. So I think for each person, depending on where you are in life and what you want out of the relationship, being ready will look differently for you. For myself, it was like, okay, well, can I really take care of that person, and can I be with them, find out about them, and not keep them on a prolonged relationship for 7-10 years without proposing or giving them hope that we're going to commit for the rest of our lives. That's what was me. But for each person, it's different because each relationship has different goals.
Oh, thank you. This is, Biafra, take it away.
I was about to say, Pastor Wesley, it's not every day we get Stanley here speechless. I want you to know that. I want that to be on record.
It's just very cool hearing, I guess, your perspective on timing and, you know, relationships. And, like, it's I guess, again, as I said before, it's validating because it's like these, we're just, me and Biafra just chat on these lives. But to hear someone like you kind of come along and be like, okay, yeah, it is some of these things. And, you know, and it's just really cool to hear, I guess.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Now, I might be circling back to more of the beginning with this point, or maybe with this pushback. But in terms of, I had some reading, in terms of the romantic, you know, relationships and our partnerships being that central relationship, right? Like, I guess I want to sort of tease and really maybe just tap into a little bit, like, what do you say to essentially the centering of friendship as the primary focus, let's say, in someone's life versus a romantic relationship? Like, what do you say to the shifting of prioritization from the romantic relationships, let's say, is the number one coveted type of relationship now, and sort of allowing other relationships to sort of get more of that limelight, or maybe even be that soul center. And you maybe have a romantic partner, but it's not your primary, you know, primary focus. What are your initial thoughts, I guess, and opinions about that kind of concept?
So what I say is, the friendship does not change. The friendship is still the same. You may be able or less able to give as much attention to it as you used to before. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when you are in a romantic relationship, you're seeking somebody. Listen, your heart is pumping 24/7. Like, this, you know, so you are determined. You're seeking, you know, you're seeking. Mm-hmm. And certainly if I'm seeking my wife or I'm seeking a girlfriend, I won't have time to kick it with you every time, you know? And if I insist on keeping the same amount of time that I used to spend with you, then that person I'm seeking is going to suffer. Because whether you want it or not, every relationship that you get into, it requires that you give it enough time, that you give it enough investment of your energy. Mm. So what's the point of seeking a lady if you're just going to talk to her but never reach out to her because you're kicking it with your friends? You know what I mean? You're just hanging out. Yes, you give some time to your friends the way that they used to be. You give some time to your family, but now you are seeking somebody and they are becoming a priority to you because you're thinking, this is somebody that I want to spend the rest of my life with, you know, because we have something. There are things you share with your girlfriend, boyfriend, you don't share with your friends. I can be kissing my friends. You know, sorry, I don't know if I can go there, but it's a different type of relationship. You get something out of it that is unique. You know what I mean?
Okay. So, I want to push back. I want to push back in that. Especially that line, you know, I think, you know, when we talk about romantic relationships and marriage partners, you know, we often use that line like, oh, this is somebody that you want to spend the rest of your life with, right?
Yes.
And my pushback somewhat is that so are some of your friendships, right? So don't you have those friends that you would want or hope to be there for the rest of your life too? So this idea that, you know, you have these platonic relationships that very much can be feeding you, let's say, emotionally, spiritually, your confidant, or, you know, whatever it may be, and they're playing some of these roles. Maybe you have two or three people playing these roles, right? That are your friends. So I guess I am coming from that standpoint. I feel like there is, again, and I mentioned a little bit earlier, I feel like there's this devaluing of friendship that occurs just generally in terms of what we think about as possible, like what is possible within these friendships, essentially in terms of how it can feel like / what it can look like and all of these things. But, you know, the same way that marriage, and obviously it's different, but essentially the friendship can, you know, it's the different shapes of love, as we like to say here, right? But they're very much, they are unique also in their own rights.
Believe it or not, you are actually saying the same thing that I am saying. You know, yes, the friendship does suffer a little bit because you're seeking that person. Mm. But as I said, there are different stages. For instance, even as I am seeking my girlfriend or somebody seeking a boyfriend, if you have a friend that has like a major emergency, like they had like a car accident, they are at the hospital, of course now you have to leave that person and
be able to be your
friend.
Yeah.
Because each places or phase that you are in life determines where you put your time. So now I'm married to my wife. My wife gets the best of my time, you know what I mean? So I invest time. And if you were to call me and it's the time that I need to spend with my wife, most likely, well, you know, I can't really be there. But if my mother becomes sick, or my father becomes sick, or one of my siblings, they become sick, they're at the hospital, they need somebody to take care of, then I certainly have to leave my wife and be able to be, like, for instance, my mother came from Haiti once, and then she was going to sleep in her house by herself because there was nobody else there, and my father was still in Haiti. So I left my house and I went to sleep at my mother's house. And my wife understood that. That didn't mean that I put my wife second.
Right.
It just means that for that phase where we were, my mother needed me more. You get what I mean? So,
right.
Yes. So for each phase where you are in life, one relationship will suffer a little bit so that the other relationship can get. And that's why we're saying that each relationship that we enter into, we have to understand it comes with a cost. So if I have 10 friends, I can give my attention to 10 friends. But if I insist on making 100 best friends, my 10 friends will not get as much of my time, because each relationship we enter into, it requires that we have the time for it, that we have the energy for it, so that we can nurture it. Because if we don't nurture it, it will not be sustained. So that's why we need to know, who is in my life and can I really invest into that relationship or that friendship? Because if we're stretched far and thin, we may not be giving the best of ourselves to any of our relationship, really. So I think we're saying the same thing. It's just like each different stage of your life will require that you allocate more of your time to each relationship you have.
Now, I just want to put my two cents in, just because I couldn't help but smile during this, like, two little conversations.
I can see you're beaming from ear to ear.
I know, because, I don't know, Professor Wesley, me and Biafra talk on a practically weekly basis, and he, and again, I kind of prefaced this before our call, but, like, we sometimes have opposing views when it comes to certain things. So when you were speaking, I was like, yes, me and Pastor Mark are here. And then I hear little bits of like what Biafra's asking, and I know what he's getting at. And I just hear it like not being, I don't know, Biafra, correct me if I'm wrong, but I kind of understood it as like Biafra is asking more of like, why is maybe friendships and platonic relationships not valued more than, you know, romantic, I don't know. And I don't want the two.
Oh, is that what you mean? Okay.
Yeah, is that what you're trying to get at? I don't know. Let me know.
Not necessarily more than. Essentially,
okay.
But it's more of like, I agree that romantic relationships currently are the sort of number one type of relationship that we covet, you know, that we all seek to be in this romantic partnership, right? And we all dream of what that will look like and how that, like, how we'll exist in that, right? But I feel like in that, we do it to an extent where the platonic relationships and what we deem as capable and possible in them suffer. So it's not, I guess, it's more so of that. What am I saying? That essentially, I feel like we can tap more into those platonic relationships than we are now, and that they can sort of be raised to an equal footing of maybe what is possible, like these type of connection that is possible within that platonic friendship.
Now I get more what you're saying. So yeah. I understand it. So yes, there are friendships that last for the rest of your life. And of course, if you have a sibling, no matter what you do, you can't unsibling them. They are your siblings. Your parents are your parents, whether or not you like them. So all those relationships, they last until you are no longer there. I think from a biblical perspective, the romantic relationship or the relationship between a husband and a wife, it ought to be the strongest relationship. Why? Because for many reasons. The first thing is because it's the first institution, human institution, that was created. Before there was society, before there was government, before there was school, there was a husband and a wife. Before there were children, there were husband and a wife. As a matter of fact, Adam and Eve, the husband and wife, they have no mother, no father. You know what I mean? So it's the first institution that God made. The second thing is, it's the only institution that causes us to be more like God. you know how the Bible said that we are made in God's image? According to Christian theology, is that God is three persons. Mm-hmm. And they live in perfect harmony. They're not the same, but they can agree together and because they are in covenant with one another.
Mm.
And marriage is the only institution where you have two people that enter into covenant and everything they do is toward one purpose and one goal, where one submit to one another for the purpose of the legacy that they want to build. No matter what friendship I have, we can build a business together. We make a lot of money. I can have a family that we spend time with, but the legacy that you build, such as, okay, living a Mark, living another Biafra, living another Stanley, is through the family. The person you marry, you have children, you invest more of who you are into them. And so even when you are no longer there, you continue to live on because your values have been transmitted. Mm. It's a legacy thing. And I think that when we talk friendship, they have lots to offer. They give support and you may have partnership that gives a lot of success and achievement, but no relationship gives you legacy as a marriage would, because that's where you get to really have a person that is in connection with you working towards the same goal. And if you are fortunate enough, or if that not fortunate, but if you get to have children, you can transmit your values so that even when you're no longer there, your name is remembered. You get what I mean? Because you are building a legacy over and over again. And of course, that's why I think from a biblical standpoint, marriage really is the strongest relationship. It does not take away from the other relationship. It shouldn't. Mm. The other relationship don't change. It's just that the bond between a husband and a wife is strongest or should be the stronger
so
one. Does that make sense?
Does your I'm definitely seeing what you're saying. Definitely having various thoughts in
rebuttals. And of course, I don't want to be so idealistic that I make it seem like every marriage is healthy and every marriage follow that model. What I'm saying is that according to the biblical model, that's what
it Yeah, which I was going to ask if you had a opinion or perspective outside of the biblical model, or if that you feel like is the most, that perspective is the one that's truest to your own opinion.
Let's look at it not from the biblical perspective.
Mm.
Say that you have somebody in government or you have somebody in sports or whatever, but somebody that is very well known. Now, we all love and cherish them. We may have their posters on our walls, right? Yeah. And we are fans. But when there's a downfall, who is behind them as they are apologizing? Their spouse.
Or their friends, or their community, yeah, or whatever that looks like. Yeah,
I know, but the people that usually stay there, like at the end of the day, like for instance, I've been to many funerals, you know, and like you say, you can say friend also, but the last people to leave, you know, I mean, that place is the spouse that they left or the children they left behind. Mm. Of course, friends can do that too. And I'm not saying that every marriage is a healthy one, because I do know that there are some very difficult ones. They are those that are very, but I'm saying, like, when you have a good marriage, you have somebody that has your back, somebody that you share life with. There are certain things you do with in a romantic relationship you cannot do with anybody else. It's a different type of bond that you build, but it doesn't change the friendship or the family. It just is different.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
I agree that it is different. I definitely, you know, I agree that it is, it takes a unique form, right, within that marriage. And I guess my whole thing is just sort of preface on the idea of that many of the qualities of what can make a marriage great also make a friendship great, also can make a friendship great. And one of the obviously biggest differences is the physical intimacy, sexual intimacy aspect of the marriage, and like how that also translates and also in terms of like the kids and childbearing and all of that. Like that's one of the what makes the marriage, let's say, romantic shape differ, you know, in a way. But because you're not making kids with your friends. I mean, you are a
some people do.
I was about to say, to each their own. But I guess, and I'm sure there's actually scenarios of friends maybe raising a kid together, for instance. Yeah. So, and it's like, what is that? And whereas not that they necessarily made the kid, but like circumstances have forced them, maybe whether they be widowed or like maybe the partner didn't want to accept the child, whatever it may be. But I guess it's less of taking away from what romantic relationships can be and what they are, but more of adding to what is possible like within that friendship mind. This is sort of my where I come from.
Yes. But, and I agree with you. They're all important.
Mm.
They're all
important. Y'all, I would love, I don't know, let's speak this into existence, a part two just about this conversation alone, because I'm over here like, I need to get some snacks because this is good. I'm like, y'all, I just love it. Because I personally think, like, I get what you're saying, Pastor Wesley, wholeheartedly. And I understand where Biafra's coming because we've had so many conversations together. So just hearing y'all converse and y'all, and just, I'm eating this up. I hope everyone else is, but yeah.
I think with that, we should probably bring things to a close. And of course, we want to thank you, Pastor Wesley, once again for coming out here and engaging in this dialogue with us and bringing so much wisdom, imparting so many wisdom and gems to us. As you can see, Stanley was taking notes. That is what I like to use as a standard of compliments, because when Stanley takes notes, you are really...
you've engaged me. You make me want to learn more. So that's definitely my compliment.
I would just say he doesn't take notes when I speak, you know? So,
well, that's because you are so clear that...
I'll go with that, actually. I don't mind that.
Listen, guys, you know, it's been an honor to be able to be with you and to be able to discuss this, you know, and I hear you. I enjoyed this conversation. I'm so glad that I made a connection with you, Biafra and Stanley. You guys are good people. I hope that we can do this again. You know, certainly, there's so much to say about love, so much to say about marriage and friendship. We could spend all our time and we would never come to where you're sitting. And it's okay for us also to have different point of view. That's what makes life so beautiful. Mm-hmm. If everybody saw it the way that I saw it, then it would be boring. I like to have a challenge where like we don't see it eye to eye, or at least if we don't really come to the same point, we can meet halfway. And if we learn to discuss things where I don't have to get all my way and you don't have to get all your way, but we can compromise.
Nice,
that's what marriage is about. That's
I saw it coming. That's what marriage is about.
I love that.
Thank you. All right, y'all. With that, folks, I think we are done. Shapes of Love out.
Thanks for joining, everybody.